Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster, and you can hear it on the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball, and I'm back today for another season preview podcast. If you're watching this live on YouTube, you probably would have seen one that I just did not long ago, releasing it as a podcast a little bit later, but we're going to be talking about the Philadelphia 76ers in today's show. And to do that, I am joined by Brian Toporek of Everywhere, Hardwood Paroxysm, B-Ball Breakdown. Where else do you write, Brian?
I've dabbled on Bleacher Report, Vantage, Hoop 76 of the True Hoop Network, and then I'm going to start soon at Today's Fast Break writing some fantasy stuff for them.
Oh, cool. Today's Fast Break's got a lot of good stuff on it. That's all those places do, but you can find all his stuff there. So that's going to be interesting to see all your stuff coming out in all those places. And if people want to keep up with all your work, where can they find you on Twitter so that you can tweet out all your links? What's your Twitter handle?
Yes. It's B Toporek, and you can check the spelling down in the bio there. B Toporek.
Yep. I'll tweet that out. You'll find it on my Twitter. You'll find it on the YouTube page. You'll find it in the show notes. You'll find it everywhere. There'll be links to it, and make sure you go across and follow Brian on Twitter and read all his articles at all those sites, because there's definitely a lot there. Now, Brian, you are a Philadelphia 76ers fan, so you are going to have some unique insight into this team. I have no doubt you're going to bring some great info to us.
Yeah, it's not a great time to be a Sixers fan, but I'll try to swallow my pride here.
You know what? It's not a terrible time. Like, it's bad, but you can see things developing. You can see young talent. You can see not even a light at the end of a tunnel, but you can see something happening. I think that's probably the best way of putting it. Now, I'm going to give you an example of something that you're going to have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. But in the Australian Football League, the team that I support has been terrible for years. Like, the last 3 or 4 years, the Western Bulldogs have been horrible, and we've been down the bottom, winning, you know, 5-6 games a year out of a 22 game season. Really bad this year. But we had what we could do was good. A lot of young guys in, played them, got them to play the right way. This season, we've gone surprisingly well, and it's all come together. And I think that's a sort of analogy to the Sixers. Not just, don't worry about competing. Just tear it all down, get the young guys in, teach them the right way to play, which is what I think Brett Brown is doing over there. Like, he's a very good coach. He's teaching them the right thing. We can see what they did last year with their improvement in their defense, going from a horrible defensive team to a very, very good defensive team. And that's always the first thing. Teach the defense, then get the offensive system going, get the players in, and I think they're on the right path. So I think you're going to have some bright times ahead at some point in the future. Just it hinges a lot on a certain big man's foot, I would say.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure we'll touch on that the next hour or so. But yeah, you know, after years of just being just so mediocre, like first round exit after first round exit, it's nice to see a long-term plan in place. I mean, it's really easy, especially in the NBA, to just get content with 45 wins and say that's your ceiling. And, you know, I appreciate Hinkie for at least saying, like, that's not the ceiling for where we want to go. We want to be championship contenders, and my strategy is very radical, but this is how we're going to get there.
Yep, and that's, yeah, no one else is really doing it, but he's doing things in a different way, and I am really excited. Like, I'm not a Sixers fan myself, but I just want to see how it turns out. I want to see how everything works out, how these players develop. And the other thing about doing it this way is the players develop at the same time, so they start to get good together. So Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, you know, Darius Saric will come in when those guys have had a couple of seasons in the NBA. Joel Embiid, fingers crossed, they're going to be hitting their primes. They're 24, 25, 26. At the same time. And then, you know, the guys you brought across, which we're going to talk about, like Nick Stauskas, again, he's a young guy. When he develops and starts becoming a good NBA player, it's going to be at the same time. And even, you know, the guys, Robert Covington, Hollis Thompson, these guys are all young. They're not 28, 29 years old. They're not, you know, 30-year-old. They're guys who are going to continue to get better and get better with each other and learn with each other. And there's a lot to be said about team chemistry, but there's also team chemistry of getting a group of young guys together that learn together and stay together and relate to each other and play for each other in that sense as well. And I think that's what Philadelphia is building. It's just been obviously slow going and tough to watch, but I think you're going to see a payoff at some point.
Yeah, I agree.
Now let's look at what happened with this team. What did they do in the offseason? Who did they bring across? And the three guys that joined the team outside of the draft picks, which we'll touch on separately later, Carl Landry, mm-hmm. Gerald Wallace, and Nick Stauskas all came across. Now, Gerald Wallace and Carl Landry, they're not young players. They're not guys that are going to develop. But they're there. They came across in order to get other young players, in order to acquire draft picks, which is basically why they're there. So we don't think they'll have some sort of an impact. Wallace was not necessarily the happiest guy playing his role in Boston. Do you imagine him playing any sort of a role in Philadelphia?
I mean, I could see him playing maybe just as a backup, like just 10, 15 minutes a night at max. I mean, I really don't think either one of those guys are relevant for anyone in anything but the deepest leagues, yeah. Like 20, 30 team kind of leagues. I just don't think, you know, as you mentioned, the Sixers are trying to harness this young core, and I don't think that they're going to spend valuable rotation minutes on guys who are not part of their long-term future, which neither Wallace or Landry are. They were, you know, they were just parts that needed to come, as you said, to get younger players and draft picks. I actually thought Jason Thompson, before we traded him for Gerald Wallace, could have been slightly intriguing, but now he is no longer with us, and Mr. Wallace is. So, no, I don't see any considerable role for either of those guys.
Jason Thompson's a weird one to me. That he seems like he's about 35 years old, but he's really not. Like he hasn't been around that long. He's not
right.
He's not that old. But the thing with Landry and Wallace is especially Landry, that they're front court guys, and the Sixers don't need contributions from front court guys. They've got those two positions pretty much locked down at this point of the season.
Right.
Landry's going to look. He'll chime in with some minutes off the bench, but there's also young guys in those positions as well. We've got now Furkan Aldemir, who's going to play there. Rishon Holmes is going to hopefully play some minutes, and I would hope that he would get minutes in preference to Landry, maybe not at the start of the season, but there's definitely some other guys there. So I would imagine that Wallace plays a literal roster-filling role, and that's it, not necessarily onto the court at all. And Landry's a better player than Wallace at this stage of his career, but again, not a lot to really love with him. But Nick Stauskas is the guy that's interesting to me. I would say at this point, he is the front runner for the starting two guard. Would you put him there, or would you have Hollis Thompson ahead of him?
Oh, I completely agree. I don't think they are planning on easing Stauskas into the rotation. I think he's going to have a big role right away. I think, you know, the thing that intrigues me about him is that when he was back in Michigan, he was pretty good with the ball in his hands.
Yep.
And the Sixers do not have a solid point guard after trading Michael Carter Williams. It's a bunch of flotsam, and we're going to see which one takes hold. But
you got to wait for me to get started on Tony Roden later on. I'll have a lot to say, but yeah, let's stick with Stauskas. But you're right; they need someone to handle the ball, and he can handle the ball. He can be one of those guys who plays off the ball predominantly, but could still end up getting three assists, three and a half assists. Yeah, maybe up to four assists, because you're right, he can handle it. He can do that. And it's, look, he was putrid in Sacramento, but was it him? Was it Sacramento? Was it a combination of both? Was it a 90-10 split? What was it? We don't know. We'll find out this year, I guess.
Right. I'm guessing it was more Sacramento than him. You know, there's, as you said, there's no way to really know for sure. And there is rumors of Boogie Cousins hating him and saying, I'm not going to pass the ball when I'm on the court with him. So hopefully he does not develop that kind of relationship with Nerlens or Jahlil. But no, I see a big role for him right away, just because, frankly, the Sixers also need shooters. They desperately need shooters. I think they were 29th in the NBA last year in terms of 3-point field goal percentage. And Stauskas, he was a 44% 3-point shooter in college. Like, he can shoot the lights out. So
didn't show that last season.
Yeah, no, he did not. So again, hopefully that was more Sacramento than, exactly. that a sign of the times. But, you know, Doug McDermott went through the same struggles as a rookie.
Yeah, so I'm a Bulls fan, so yeah, I'm well aware of that.
Okay, good, yeah. So, yeah, I'm in Chicago, so I caught a fair share of Bulls games. And, yeah, so I think it, sometimes, especially for guys who have just specialized in shooting not only on catch and shoots but off the dribble, the transition from college to the NBA, especially if you're kind of buried at the end of the rotation, it's just not always that easy. You don't always catch hold right away. But I'm expecting big things from Stauskas this year, both in real life and fantasy. He's a guy I'm planning on targeting kind of in that late round as a high upside guy.
Well, he's got an ADP at the moment of 146. I'd be happy. Look, he could be crap. Look, nothing could come. But at pick 120, I'm happy. Just grab him, see what happens. And we know that guys who struggle in their rookie year, which happens to stacks of people, no one is good in their rookie year. One player is good generally in their rookie year. And last season, it was Nerlens Noel. Look, Andrew Wiggins won the rookie of the year, but he was a shocking fantasy player. No, that's not true. He wasn't shocking. He was not good consistently throughout the season.
Right.
He wasn't a top 100 player overall. Only Nerlens was. And that's the case every year. There's only one guy who's a top 100 guy or two guys max. But these guys who struggle with their shot, we can see Stauskas go from a player who shot, and what did he shoot last season from the field? 37%, and he shot 32 from three. He could easily be a 43% and 35 guy from three, easily. That sort of jump.
For sure.
That sort of jump is not, it's not crazy talk. It might not happen, but it's definitely worth the risk, because once that goes up, then your scoring goes up, and your three pointers go up, and you've already affected three categories straight away just by hitting more shots. Everything else, we need to see how that all develops. But the opportunity for him is significant, and this is massive for him, and the fact that he comes along with a couple of first round picks that are attached to him coming across is basic larceny from the Sixers in order to pull that deal off.
Yeah, I saw you already did the Kings preview, but if you could pass my condolences to the Kings fan that you spoke with, that was just. You know, I was upset on draft night for different reasons. And, you know, I was hoping we traded back up into the first round. And I'm like, what are you doing with these 5 second round picks? And then they flipped two of them for Stauskas and future first and then two pick swaps. And it was just like, okay, you clearly know what you're doing. I'm going to shut up now. Well done, Samuel.
Yep. No, it was, it was pretty weird to see it, go down. He's going to be like, this is like, you say, okay, it's a first round pick, that's weird, and then like, and then there's pick swaps, and everything is just going right in this trade.
Right.
It didn't feel like there was any, and then they used the space to sign Rondo and Bell and Elliott. Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah. And you know, when it was first getting reported, it was like they're sending an international prospect over, and everyone's like, oh my god, they sent Saric. Like, okay, like, that's fine, I don't love the deal. And it was like, oh no, it's not Saric.
It's a Mitrovic and Guidaitis. Okay. Yeah, okay. We can live with that.
right. Yeah. So that was just lovely. But one more thing on Stauskas. Just the Sixers offense has been putrid the last couple of years. I think really that's more in terms of the talent they have than their actual offensive scheme. Like, their top 10 in pace last year, their top 10 in 3-point attempts. So I think if nothing else, Stauskas is going to have an opportunity to bomb away 4 or 5 times from deep. And, you know, even if he shoots 35%, you're still getting 1.5 threes a game from him. Like, that's, as you said, that's well worth a late round pick in the 100-120 range.
Yep.
Like, that's, sign me up for that.
Look, he could be terrible and end up being outside the top 200, no doubt.
Oh, for sure.
There is the potential that, at that pick, and that's what you're sort of looking at that pick. If you're in a standard 10 or 12 team league, you want potential. And I mentioned this in the last show that I did, the Warriors show, that it depends. If you're in a 20 team league and you're picking at 130, you don't want potential necessarily at that pick. You want a bit more steadiness. But in a 10 or 12 team league, the last couple of picks, you're going to get rid of these guys if they don't work out. You're going to just churn through those last 3 or 4 roster spots anyway. And if it doesn't work out after the first 3 weeks, you move on. And Stauskas is that guy that, you know, he might become a top 100 player, and that's going to be good value if that happens. Now, the players they lost over the offseason, not really much to write home about here. The two Robinsons, Thomas Robinson and Glenn Robinson, and Henry Sims, who I thought Henry Sims was going to be a decent fantasy contributor last season, but he was yuck. He's a yuck player anyway.
Yeah.
He's currently in Phoenix on a training camp deal, but we don't need to. There's nothing to see here with these guys. Now,
No, he was. I'm a Georgetown fan, so I followed Henry Sims's career very closely, and yeah, he's not good. Like, he had one good year at Georgetown. He was just I never his first 3 years there, I never thought he would be an NBA player. So
It did come out of
not
nowhere.
totally surprised that he moved on.
It definitely
Yeah,
came out of nowhere.
he had a big senior season, and then I guess he parlayed that into two more years in the NBA than he should have had. But his loss will not be felt all that much. I think, frankly, the biggest loss they had was Ish Smith.
I agree with that.
Just because, that was once they traded Carter Williams at the trade deadline, they tried Isaiah Kanan as the starting point guard for a while, and he added some much needed spacing, but he wasn't all that great in terms of feeding Nerlens in the post. And then Ish Smith comes along, and Nerlens said something like, "He's the first real point guard I've played with," which got a lot of attention in Philly because it was perceived as a shot at MCW. But yeah, I mean, I think losing him, again, it's just the point guard situation is so up in the air at the moment. So it's just hard to say who's going to benefit from his loss. But if he had come back, I would have been intrigued with him as a late round sleeper too.
Well, you know what? He could still come back. He hasn't signed anywhere.
That's
And
true. That's
he
true.
we don't know what let's go through these point guards now, because this is probably the biggest question mark. And actually had a question come through via the Basketball Monster forum from Silent Jim. Oh yes, oh here's a question. He says over or under 23 wins.
Oh, I'm taking over. I
Okay.
think, I mean, they had 18 last year, I believe.
Yes, 18. Yep.
And yeah, I mean, I think Okafor and Stauskas alone, that, they're, I don't think they start 0 and 17 like they did last year. I think they've got a little more talent than they did last year, and the guys are more comfortable in the system. If Nerlens takes a step forward, I'm thinking 30 is probably high, but I'm thinking like the 20. Five range, like 25 to 27. And then I'm hoping the Kings just implode and we get to do the pick swap with them.
That would be very handy. I reckon for their wins, I think they get over 20. I'm not sure about 23, but it's pretty close to the number. If I had to go one way, I'd say under, but it would be marginally. And I'm almost 100% sure they will clear the 20 win mark this season. It remains to be seen, clearly. But the point I wanted to get to this is Silent Jim had a two-part question. The other part of his question is, okay, the logjam at point guard with Roten, Isaiah Cannon, Pierre Jackson, and now there's the Kendall Marshall rumors.
Yeah.
What do we make of this? What do we make of the Kendall Marshall rumors to start with?
I mean, at this point, you're just kind of throwing darts at the board, and you're gonna, I mean, I could totally see him signing there. Like, it's a great opportunity to win a starting point guard job. So I think that makes sense for him, and it makes sense for the Sixers because he's a pretty decent 3-point shooter. So I think you invite him to camp, and then you kind of just put those guys against one another and see who comes out on top, see where the offense runs best through.
It's going to be. It's look. When he was with the Lakers, he had significant fantasy value. He was getting that was with D'Antoni coaching, though, obviously. But he was getting a stack of assists. He's not a great player. He's not a good shooter. But he was able to get some shots in, hit some threes, get big numbers of assists, and running the point in Philadelphia, where he can throw lobs to Okafor, he can throw lobs to Noel as well down low, or just throw the ball into Okafor down low, not even lobs, just throw it into him. Let him establish position, give it to him, let him make one move and score, and he could be a 8-9 assist guy if he gets 30 minutes. The problem is he doesn't separate himself from these other guys. We mentioned before that the Sixers lacked spacing. I'm talking Isaiah Cannon. They could theoretically put a lineup out there with Cannon at the one, Stauskas at the two, and Robert Covington at the three, and that's a lot of spacing. That's a lot of shooting compared to what we've seen in the last 2 years, when they've been just chucking out garbage that couldn't shoot it at basically every position, from Carter Williams all the way up. But a Cannon, Stauskas, Covington, one, two, and three, that's a lot more shooting now. Obviously, Noel and Okafor aren't doing it. There's no such thing as a stretch four on this team unless they put Covington there, which they could do, and run Hollis Thompson at the three, who's not a terrible three-point shooter. But their spacing is improving, and that's what's going to improve their play.
Back to this. Yeah, I mean, I think just, you know, you have two low post guys. You need to have spacing around them. You can't afford to do what we had the last couple of years at MCW, because there's not going to be room to cut into the lane. Like, it's just not going to exist unless Nerlens has a 15-foot jump shot, which he is reportedly working on. But until we see it, and until he starts hitting it consistently, you know, you need to have a point guard who can shoot.
If you had to guess at this point, excluding Kendall Marshall because he hasn't signed, who is the starting point guard on opening night?
My personal guess is Tony Roten. I know. I just, you know, when MCW started the season last year, he was out for the first couple weeks, and Roten ran the offense somewhat okay. He at least put up big numbers for fantasy. I mean, he's not a great shooter, so if you need, you know, if you're going just all shooting, maybe it is the Kane and Stauskas Covington lineup, but I'm also thinking you need shooting off the bench. So maybe Kanan comes in as a relief guy, and kind of it's like a 50-50 split with Roten. I mean, all of these guys in terms of fantasy, it's a gamble.
Definitely.
It's just once, you know, hopefully you have your draft kind of close to the start of the season, so you can start hearing reports from training camp and see if any of these guys are separating themselves from the rest of the pack. But just a completely uninformed guess would be Roten as the starter.
Okay, now
assuming, you know, that we don't even know if he's healthy. Like, he's coming off the torn ACL. He might not be ready for opening night, in which case, Kanan, easy.
Now, I was speaking with Jeff Stotts, who's an athletic trainer and RotoWire's injury expert, a couple of weeks back, and we talked about Roten and his knee injury. He said it wasn't a full ACL tear, only a partial ACL tear, so he imagines he'll be okay. So it's not the full recovery needed as some of the other guys, like a Jabari Parker. So he should be right to go. But I mentioned I was going to talk Tony Roten. Look, now someone watching live by the name of Citadel on YouTube, when I mentioned Tony Roten before, he's just added a few comments on here. Tony Roten in points leagues is gold bullion. Sheer unbridled bullion. Invest in Tony Roten gold bullion coins. So someone's a fan of Tony Roten that's watching. And that's true. In points league, that's great because you don't take into consideration his absolutely horrific shot selection and shooting efficiency. It is painful to watch. I can't. Yeah. I like watching the Sixers because Noel is super fun. Covington was really fun. Okafor is going to be good to watch. But Tony Roten, seriously, it is just, you can watch a guy take a three when he can't shoot, when he hits 26% of his threes, that's yuck. And then when he drives in and there's this guy standing wide open, ignores them, drives under the basket, comes back around, hoists up a shot over his head. It's like watching Brandon Jennings, but worse. It's exceptionally worse. And for that reason, not only is he not a good player, he's not even a bad player. He's worse than a bad player. Last season, Jakar Sampson was my nominal mention as the worst player in the NBA. But in terms of pure watchability, Tony Roten is the worst player in the NBA. At least Sampson can jump and dunk. Roten just makes me want to rip my eyes out. But that doesn't mean mean you ignore him in fantasy leagues. He's just horrific to watch. And I just for pure basketball sense, he shouldn't get the job.
He's also a turnover magnet, category league, just stay away.
Turnovers are gone. He doesn't. He'll go out there and go 15-5-6, and you go, that's great, but geez, exactly, he's just brutal. But your point on Cannon is spot on in terms of him coming off the bench. When he moved to the bench role when Ish Smith got the starting job last season, he was still fantastic. He was still able to hit basically two threes a game in only 20 minutes. And you know what? For a fantasy league, I've said this all the time, Brian, is that I don't care if the guy gets 24 minutes. If he goes out there and hits two threes in 24 minutes and scores me 12 points and gets three assists or 3.5 assists, that has value. I don't care that he's capped. That'd be great if he got 35 minutes and hit three threes and got 15 points, but I'll take the two threes. I'll take the 2.2 threes and the four assists and the big free throw percentage that he can provide. And I think Cannon and Roten, they're both really decent picks towards the end of the draft. We don't know exactly how it's going to work out. But if Cannon doesn't get starters minutes, he's still valuable. If Roten doesn't, he's not, because he relies upon just accumulating by brute force, basically. There's no tact to what he does. It's just like, I'm here for minutes and I'm just going to do whatever I can. Don't worry about everyone else. And that's basically his thought process. So he needs the starting job. Cannon doesn't. So that's why I'd probably be more likely to invest in Cannon if I want to go safer with that pick, because I think that no matter what his role is, there's something there.
Yeah, I'd agree. And especially, I mean, I don't know how much this factors into Sam Hinkie's mind and Brett Brown's mind, but the fact that this guy was kind of the key piece in the KJ McDaniels trade.
Yep.
I mean, I at least think they aren't going to like totally shove him to the end of the bench. No, I think
he's got
least
a role, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Pierre Jackson, you know, I've always been in love with him. So who knows what he has to offer? I mean, he's a pretty small guy. Can't imagine you're going to get much defense out of him. But you know, if he gets 15, 20 minutes a game, he could have a role at the end of a fantasy bench.
It's not crazy that he becomes a starter at some point as well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like, again, it's just, you kind of have to wait till training camp to see what the hell happens here. Even, you know, if Kendall Marshall comes too, like they're all intriguing candidates. Whichever one wins that job is one to invest in late, because the points, the pace is there, the 3-point attempts should be there. It could be a very valuable role.
Definitely. It's something that bears not only mentioning, but watching. We need to watch what's going to happen here. And any of these guys, if they get minutes, become valuable in a fantasy league, because someone's got to do something here.
For sure.
Now, I like to look at guys in dynasty leagues. We want to talk about the draft picks from the last couple of years. And I just did the Warriors preview podcast. There was one guy to talk about, Kevin Looney, the only guy on their roster that's been a draft pick. I go to the Sixers, and there's like eight guys I've got listed down here that I need to talk about. Some of them are going to have no impact, like Vasily Micic, who's a point guard that's over in Europe. Apparently, he's going to be a pretty decent player if he comes across. We don't know if he will, but from what I heard, he's a really good passer, and that's something to keep interested, but there's no guarantee he comes over. Dario Saric, though, another guy in Europe, he is likely coming over for next season. From what we've heard about his game and how it translates, he looks to me he's going to be a guy who's going to be able to provide ball handling skills and passing ability from the front court. He can hit some threes, he can get some rebounds. I think he'll be a relatively useful fantasy guy when he comes across, and he is worth it. It depends on the way you're setting up your dynasty and the way you're setting up your dynasty team, and if you're building for the future or whatever it is. But Saric coming, it's only one season you're missing out of. I think he can come across and have maybe like a Nikola Mirotic sort of impact. Maybe not to that level. He's not at Mirotic's level just yet, but I think he can be around that sort of spot. How do you see Saric?
Yeah, I'm really high on him. I think, I'm not sure he goes to the Mirotic level right away. I mean, a lot will depend on Embiid's health and if he's back as well next year, because at that point, you have to wonder, you know, that then you've got four guys who are all deserving of at least realistically 30 minutes a game. I mean, maybe they ease Embiid in, so that opens up a bigger early season role for Saric, or maybe they trade one of those guys. Like maybe they see Nerlens extension coming up and they say, you know, we're gonna trust Embiid's foot here. So it's hard to say exactly what role he's gonna have out of the gate. A lot depends on Embiid, but you know, Mirotic, he was, again, kind of, he was in that same spot. You had Powell, you had Noah, you had Taj. So you had three big guys ahead of him. And then all it took was one or two injuries and he explodes. So given Embiid's injury history, given Nerlens' injury history, you know, Saric could be in line at some point for 30 plus minutes a game next year. It's not like he's playing against total scrubs in Europe too. Like, he's playing against, you know, strong competition over there. So I'm very high on his long-term fantasy prospects. I would definitely advise dynasty league owners to keep an eye on him, or even if you're in a keeper league at the end of the year and you're patrolling the waiver wire, you know, just take a flyer on him and see what happens.
I would agree completely with that. Now, I want to talk about some other Philadelphia draft choices. Now, let's go straight to Joel Embiid. Missing the season again with another issue with his foot, the not healing of the foot fracture. Before we get into talking about how sad you are about it, there was a question that came in from Bechtel J. Who knows? I'm probably wrong there. Bechtel J. He says, I'm in a keeper league. Would you grab Embiid for $1 and throw him in the IR slot for next year, or don't waste my time? Now, before you answer that, I'm going to say absolutely 100% do it. Do it, do it, do it. For $1 and IR slot, there's no question. Would you?
Yeah,
disagree?
I totally agree.
He's got the ability to be monstrous, like absolutely huge, if he's healthy.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, unless you get to a point late in the year where, you know, like last year, Carmelo Anthony was out for the year, and if you need that IR spot for him to keep him instead, then you can maybe move Joel back to the waiver wire. But yeah, I mean, why not take the gamble? Because if he's healthy, like, he could be a two-way star for the Sixers. I mean, he's the guy who the Sixers think is the franchise cornerstone.
Yep.
So, I'm guessing even if he, you know, knock on wood, he's healthy next year, he comes back, he gets to play, he's going to miss Summer League in all likelihood. So his first NBA action is going to be two years removed from playing any sort of real basketball. Like, he's going to start slow. You don't need to panic if that happens, especially if you're in a keeper league. Like, he is the type of really high upside prospect that can win you a league a couple of years down the line because you spent $1 on him this year.
Yeah, exactly. That's a massive bargain at $1. Because he can do it all. He can block shots. He's going to rebound. He'll score. He can hit threes as well. We've seen him.
Yeah.
That's not going to be a regular thing necessarily. But Okafor can't hit a shot outside the paint. Noel is working on something with MB. He can just go out there and stretch everything out. And
right,
it's going to be sad if we never get to see it. But if it happens, it's going to be huge for this team. It's really going to turn them into bottom feeders, into, like, this team is, 3 years' time, if he's playing, Saric is here, and they either keep Noel or Okafor or get something back for them as a backcourt player, where it's like, we don't want to have to play Philadelphia because they've got everything covered.
Right, yeah. I mean, this small ball revolution could be in trouble when you're going up against Embiid and Noel or Embiid and Saric. Like, that's...
They're big guys, but they do other things. Like, Embiid can go out and defend and hit the threes. And Noel gets in there and plays passing lanes like a guard and gets steals and turns things around that way. And they're two big guys, but it's because they do big guy things differently to other people as well that makes them effective and makes them hard to deal with. And that's something as well that's worth noting.
Right.
A couple other draft picks: Jordan McRae, who played down in Melbourne here, down here where I am last season. He's going to be over in camp. We don't know if he's going to make the roster yet. Is there anything for him? He impressed in Summer League his first go around. Didn't necessarily do a huge amount this time, but is he a chance at making the roster?
A slight chance. I mean, I guess as a really end of the bench guy, I mean, I wouldn't be totally shocked if he ends up in the D League this year.
Yep.
I don't think he's a guy, unless we hear out of camp that he's really impressing and he's going to win a major role, which I don't necessarily see happening. You know, I wouldn't invest very highly in him.
As a prospect, Jordan McRae or JP Tokoto?
Probably McRae slightly, just because Jeremy Grant kind of fills that same role as Tokoto. I'm not sure that Tokoto is ever going to be a great shooter, and we just need, like, he's a good wing defender, but Grant's already that. Whereas McRae at least has the upside of a shooter at some point if he hits the ceiling.
let's move on to Jeremy Grant now, because he is an intriguing guy to me. I think he's in line for a pretty decent season. He's going to be playing there is a chance he starts over Covington. I'd be really not happy if that happened. I think he definitely needs to play off the bench and play behind Nerlens and behind Covington. But you're right about his defense. He's a guy that can threaten to become a triple one player, which Brian, when I talk triple ones, is what I mean, when a guy who averages a three, a steal, and a block, the three smallest volume fantasy categories, but if you can get a one in each of those, you become super valuable. And he could do that this season. He's not going to score a ton. He's not going to shoot good percentages, but he could go out there and fill up those threes, steals, and blocks, almost in the mold of a James Johnson sort of player. That sort of guy that's a really great on-ball defender, a great defender in terms of statistical stuff as well. I think he's a real interesting guy, and he's going to be on and off a lot of fantasy teams this season because, hey, I need someone who's getting hot and getting steals. Or, hey, Jeremy Grant had 7 blocks last game. I think he's going to be and he's fun to watch as well, which is good.
Yeah, I agree that he could be the triple one kind of guy. I mean, I'm like you. I'm hoping Covington starts just because of the spacing issues. But, you know, he'll have a role. I mean, he's going to play over Gerald Wallace, that's for sure. Yeah, so well,
if he doesn't, there's a real issue.
Yeah, then the Brett Brown love train is going off the tracks at that point.
What do you think about Grant? Now, it's going to be hard for him to ever to be a starter on this team just with the guys in front of him, though. Yeah. I think that is probably limiting his upside in Dynasty. He might get 25 minutes this year, but that might be the most he ever really gets in a season. He might get 25, but that might cut down next year when Saric comes across. Might be a situation where when he's up for restricted free agency that someone makes an offer that the Sixers just go, we're not doing that, or we're going to trade him because he's just not going to be a starter for us. So that sort of limits his potential at this point, but he definitely has fantasy upside because he contributes in those categories where they're so hard to get, and that's something I do like about him. Now, the player that I reckon most people want to hear us talk about in terms of rookies or rookies from the last couple of seasons is Jahlil Okafor. Another question from the Basketball Monster forums as well came in from Charles Oakley, who's a frequent asker of questions. So thank you, Charles, for asking those questions. He says, my question is, Basketball Monster has him projected at almost 15 points, 8 rebounds, 1.1 blocks, 55 from the field, 51 from the free throw line, with only 3.8 attempts per game. And he goes, that seems low. And then he asked me, am I in agreement with these numbers? Well, I think that they're pretty... I think 15 and 8 seems about right for what we can expect. He could be an 18 and 8 guy. I think 15 and 8 is probably what we can expect because, you know, historically, rookie centers don't get big minutes. I mentioned this on the show the other day, that since in the last 25 years, Brian, there's been 5 rookie centers who have played more than 32 minutes a game in 25 years. And it's clearly not a big amount. In contrast, guards in the last 25 years, 39 guards have played over 32 minutes as rookies in that time. So big men just get moved along slowly. So I can see him being limited a bit by that. The free throws, 4 attempts a game it's a decent amount. I don't see why he's going to have much more than that because I don't think his minutes are going to be there. Even if you look at a guy like Andre Drummond, he has not been a guy in his career that's been getting massive amounts of free throws, even as bad a shooter as he is. So I think that's probably about right. The question comes in, where do you rank him in a rookie draft? If you're looking at fantasy rookies, Brian, how do you view Okafor? Because he's going to have a stack of opportunity, probably the most opportunity of any rookie this season. How do you view him?
Right. Yeah, I mean, in terms of fantasy this year, I'm honestly not super high on him just because I have a lot of questions about the on-court fit between him and Nerlens. And I worry that those two guys, unless Nerlens has that mid-range jump shot, like those two guys are going to cannibalize each other's opportunities in the post. Like I think, you know, opponents aren't going to have to worry about Nerlens hitting that 15 footer. So they can just send a double team at Jahlil. And, you know, he kind of struggled during summer league. Like he's a great passer, so he can pass out of those situations, but that's limiting his scoring upside. Yep. So I'm honestly, like, I don't think I'm going to own him in any redraft leagues this year. I would play it safe and see how it unfolds before investing heavily in him. I would put him definitely behind Moutier in a rookie draft. Probably behind D'Angelo Russell, because I think the Lakers are going to let him run the point for better or worse and see, you know, they realize that Kobe is not going to last forever and D'Angelo is the guy they invested in. So he's the future. I'd put him ahead of Towns just because I think Towns, they're going to wean him very slowly, and they have a lot of other big guys there. You know, they have KG, they have Jang, and they also have Pekovic if he's ever healthy. So I'd probably, yeah, I think I would put Okafor third in terms of fantasy rookies this year behind the two point guards.
Okay, that's it. Now, to me, it depends on what you're doing and how you're playing. If you're playing in a rotisserie league, forget about it. Like, even though he's only taking, you know, projected to take 4 free throw attempts per game, it's really hard to come back from that. You need to pair him with James Harden to get yourself back to an average free throw, middle of the pack free throw, and you're not always going to be able to pair him with James Harden or Kevin Durant, who are two guys who sit well above everybody else in their ability to impact that category. And if you pair him with a guy like LeBron or a guy that much less value, you have to spend so much time getting the free throws back up to where they could be. And then if he goes over the 3.8 attempts, then it becomes even worse of a problem. So for rotisserie leagues, forget about it. For head-to-head leagues, I don't mind him because I think that 15 and 8 and a block is handy. But the thing is, you're going to get no threes, assists low, no steals, and he's really a three-category guy. At the moment, his ADP sits at 76, which I'm sort of okay with. I don't mind it at that spot, but it's not ideal. I'm not one for drafting rookies. In terms of overall, for if you're looking at dynasties and you're drafting rookies only for the future, Towns is the number one guy by a country mile for me in any of those sort of formats looking for the future. I would have Okafor down lower. I think he can be valuable, but I just don't think he ever expands his game to contribute in more than those three categories. I think that Russell, although he really disappointed me and I wasn't overly impressed with him in summer league. Moutier I'd have probably at 2, and then Russell and Okafor probably 3 and 4. Actually, you know what? I'd probably even have Porzingis ahead of those guys because I think he can be tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
We mentioned earlier about Saric playing over against big guys and men. Like, that's what Porzingis has been doing, and he's been playing well and starting in that role. He's a guy that I probably have ahead of both of those guys for long-term dynasty stuff, but I still really need to get into my dynasty rankings and look at it. But it's a good question because, yeah, he can come out and he could be 15-8 this year. He could also just be, you know, 16-8 next year and 17-8 the year after, and just never expand out to become more than a 2.5 to 3 category guy along the lines of like a Zach Randolph, although Randolph doesn't actually block shots. He's just points, rebounds, and field goals. So maybe he becomes a four category, but he's not going to be a Nerlens Noel shot block. He's not going to be a two shot, not two blocks a game sort of guy. He'd be probably max or ceiling like 1.4, 1.5 would be my guess throughout his career. He's just not athletic enough. And with Noel there, he doesn't need to be.
Right.
And then if Embiid's there, he doubly doesn't need to be. Those guys can do all the athletic blocking shots, and Okafor can just sit his ass in the paint and score, and that's basically what he'll do.
Yeah, that's the big reason I'm kind of low on him. I just don't see him giving that multi-category. You know, like for big guys in fantasy, I try to target the guys who are either going to give you blocks or threes or ideally both. Like, I want guys who contribute in categories that you wouldn't necessarily expect from bigs.
Yep.
So, I mean, I just don't ever see Okafor developing 3-point range. Look,
if he can develop 10-foot range, it'd be a bonus, I reckon.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, like, you know, I don't know, especially given the point guard situation, like, are we going to have a point guard that can feed him in the post reliably? I hope so, but it's just a lot of uncertainty with him this year. I don't know who else is in that 76 to 80 range, but I have a feeling there are probably a couple guys who I would prefer over Okafor in that spot.
There's a guy that we're going to mention a little bit later that we'll get into, and I'll tell you that one. But there's one more rookie that I want to talk about, Rishaun Holmes, who's a second-round draft choice this year. I reckon he's in for an interesting season. I think he's going to have potentially an okay role on this team, backing up Noel. It might only be 15 minutes a night. It might be less. But do you see him playing over Kyle Landry? Probably not to start the season, but do you see him moving into that role as the primary backup big man?
Yeah, I think eventually, as the season goes on, I don't think he starts over him right away, but I could definitely see him moving into that role. I mean, he was a great shot blocker in college. And he had, you know, he didn't take many threes, but he had somewhat of 3-point range. Like, I think he shot over 40% unlimited attempts last year. I mean, I know Bowling Green is not the NBA, but, you know, I think at this point, the Sixers are still very much in talent acquisition mode. So they're trying to suss out whether the young guys they have are worth keeping around as long-term pieces. And they're hoping a guy hits like Robert Covington did last year. So, you know, I don't think Holmes is going to be Covington, but, you know, why not see what he can do rather than running out a retread in Carl Landry, who has no chance of being part of your team's long-term future.
Yep, I agree with that completely. I think that Holmes is going to be an interesting second half guy for deeper leagues as he gets a bit of a role and starts to get more minutes and get more comfortable. I think he could be a guy that maybe even like a John Henson type who goes out there and gets 2 blocks in 18 minutes a night. Holmes could be that, potentially that guy. That's just, it's not, I'm not saying that's what he's going to do, but that's, it's something that could develop, and don't be shocked when you see a Rashawn Holmes game where he comes out and gets 4 blocks in 15 minutes and go, geez, what happened there? But that's something that he can do. Now, we've mentioned a lot of names here. Brian, let's talk breakout candidates. So a guy that we want to think that's going to be a good player and go to a great player, or develop from an irrelevant player into a decent role player. Who do you see on this roster as a guy that fits that category?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully Nick Stauskas counts, because yep.
He was irrelevant.
He was very much, he was totally irrelevant. And then, I mean, I think just based on opportunity alone, he's going to kind of be forced into becoming a decent fantasy role player. I think he's not going to get buried on the bench. And, you know, based on that alone, he's going to put up some pretty decent stats this year, I would imagine.
I would agree with that. That's a really good pick. Now, although guy, I went from a different route. You went from irrelevant to decent. I went from good to great. I think Nerlens Noel can become a great sort of fantasy guy. His numbers post All-Star break were incredible. He averaged 10 rebounds a game. He averaged over 2 steals a game, and he averaged over 2 blocks a game. He got his free throw percentage up to 66%. Which, when it started off the season, below 60. If he gets his free throw percentage continuing to go up, he could be a guy that gets 70 to 71% from the free throw line. He could be a 9-rebound, 2-steal, 2-block guy, and that it's literally unheard of, unless we're talking Hakeem Olajuwon, right, David Robinson sort of style. It doesn't happen. And the great thing about Noel is if he goes out there and gets 2 steals, it's as you mentioned, it's out-of-position stats for a big man. The leaders in steals is Kawhi Leonard, Ricky Rubio, Chris Paul, small guys. Steph Curry had a good amount of steals. It's not centers. So I did it this year in the Red Rock Listener League. I was punting assists, and you punt assists, that means you're devaluing point guards, because a lot of their value comes from assists. But so many point guards get steals and contribute that. So what I did is I went, okay, that's fine. I'm just going to pick Nerlens Noel, and he takes the place of a point guard. But then he also gets 2 blocks a game and gets rebounds, and you know, can help get a 50% field goal. Hopefully a 50% field goal rate, and that helps in so many areas. So he covers a lot of holes in that sense. And if you're punting assists, you want to get these guys out of position that get steals. So the way I approach that team is I got Jimmy Butler as a shooting guard to get steals. I got Nerlens Noel, and then I got Thad Young at the end of the draft. Ooh. And all those guys can be 2-steal-a-game guys, and I don't even need a point guard to get steals. And that's and that's not, it's nothing even to do with what he can do on the court. I think he's going to be tremendous this season. I think he's super fun to watch. And if you said, as you said, he's developing that, you know, 15-foot jump shot, it's going to be real, real good for him. I think he's going to be a tremendous player. He was, you know, obviously the injuries set him back and dropped him down to 6, but he was pretty much clearly the number one guy in that draft until that injury. And the Sixers got a steal getting him at pick 6. And getting another draft choice out of it.
Yeah, which turned into Saric.
Exactly.
So that was,
turned into Saric and another draft pick.
Yeah. Oh, God. Such extortion.
That was extortion. No,
I'm completely on board with you. In the B-Ball Breakdown Dynasty League that we're in, I took Nerlens 3rd overall in our rookie draft, which might have been a slight reach. But, yeah, I'm just in love with his blocks and skills.
I'm happy with that. Because we're in that league together, which is probably the most insane league that I've been in ever. The rules took me 15 minutes to just read the first time we're in it. It's a crazy league. That's the one that myself and Mark Roberts are owning the team. And Brian's got one of the teams in it as well. I started another league myself, a dynasty league using real player salaries. So we've got we've got 14 teams. We've got a $70 million salary cap, but you draft the guys and you take on their salary. So you pick Anthony Davis at pick one and you get his $7 million salary, which is a bargain.
Right.
Then you go pick LeBron, you've got to take his $20 million salary on. It's a little bit of a different situation. I picked at pick 13. I picked Nerlens at pick 13 out of everybody. Okay. Because, he cost me $3 million or whatever he cost me, $4 million. Didn't cost me much because I need to make sure I'm getting production with low salary. Like I, on the board at pick 13, there was LeBron was still available. Jimmy Butler was still available. Chris Paul was still available. I picked Nerlens ahead of all of them because of partly his salary, but because I think he can legit be a top 20 player anyway without even factoring into that salary. Let's talk sleeper players, Brian. To me, there's a real standout to me here based on where these average draft positions are sitting at the moment, and that's Robert Covington.
I agree.
He has an ADP of 97 at the moment on Yahoo. I think that he exceeds that by 3 to 4 rounds. And the good thing about that is if people are thinking that Robert Covington's a guy to pick in the 90s, then you don't pick him where the value is. You don't pick him if you think he's going to be a top 60 guy. You pick him in the 80s. If you think he's in the 60s and the ADP is saying that he's in the 90s, you pick him in the 80s. So you make sure that you get him, but you give yourself 2 rounds of value. And a 40 differential between where you rank him and where the ADP is amazing because you can still go 2 rounds higher than ADP, so no one gets a sniff, but it's also 2 rounds better than what, 2 rounds worth of extra value. And I think that he's going to be in for a great season. He was fantastic at threes last year, scored the ball well, got some nice rebounds, blocked half a shot a game, gets you steals as well, and a big free throw percentage. Now, your field goal percentage is going to be struggling. I think that's probably kind. But I think that he was a real find last season, and I'm really excited to see what he does. Actually having a full season with this team, having a preseason, having a training camp, working with these guys, not just coming in during the start of the year and go, here I am, and blowing up. I think he's going to potentially get better. I'm a little bit worried about what Brett Brown did at the end of the last season and benching him for Jason Richardson, which was one of the only things I've really questioned Brown with in terms of what he was doing, because I thought Covington was playing well. But what I understand is he was doing it to teach him a lesson. Like, you need to work on this part of your game, and if you don't, you're not getting the minutes. And I think that'll work out well for him. I think he'll come back a stronger, better player.
Yeah, I completely agree. Frankly, I would rather have Covington this year than I would Jahlil Okafor.
Me too.
Yeah, the field goal percentage will definitely hurt, but what he makes up for in threes alone is going to be a huge, huge help.
But to say that, okay, the field goals will hurt, and they will, but they won't hurt as much as what Okafor's free throws will hurt.
Right, that's true.
They'll hurt by a lot still, and he's currently projected at like 40% shooting on 12 attempts, and that's bad, but it's still not as bad as Okafor's free throws, and that's something you need to take into consideration as well. And then he offers, he might score a similar amount, he'll get the threes, he'll get some okay rebounds. I think he's going to be a real interesting guy. And at that sort of value for me is really good. Did you have anyone else listed as a sleeper for you, or was he the guy?
He was the one. He's the big guy. I mean, Stauskas, again, I just think, I would take him. I think his ADP is in the 140s. Yeah, like 146. I would gamble on him a round or two earlier than that just to if he hits, he's going to hit big. And if he doesn't, then, if it's a 10 or 12 team league, cut bait and then find someone else on waivers because there's going to be plenty of guys there.
Yep, that's exactly right. Now, the next section I had down was talking about guys who are overvalued. And I'm looking at all these guys' ADPs, and maybe you could say Okafor, but I can see that in a head-to-head league that you could pick him in the 70s, and that's okay. But otherwise, I think everyone's pretty much either good value or spot on where they need to be. So no one strikes me as guys where, Okafor will be the guy that I don't draft because someone always wants to jump on a rookie early. And unless my team's set up to punt free throws, he's no good. But otherwise, I think everyone else is pretty much spot on. Or did you see it a different way? There's somewhere where you go, no, that's a little bit wrong.
No, I think, yeah, Okafor was my pick too. I mean, again, just I don't trust his role right out of the gate. And then depending on what happens with the point guard situation, probably Tony Roten.
Yep.
If he's not the starter,
if he's 140
is too high for him.
Yeah, you don't want anything to do with him at that point. He'll be a 200s right. guy if he gets 18 minutes a night.
Yeah, exactly. So he's a guy, if you're doing your draft this weekend for whatever reason, I would not invest heavily in Tony Roten's stock.
If you're drafting like we currently are at the moment and
right.
you're getting real into it real early. I've got two drafts right. currently going at the moment, so
two drafts. Oh my gosh.
Definitely they're slow ones and we're doing offline, but yeah, I've still got two going on at the same time. Now let's talk about a guy who is limited by his playing time in this team. So someone who's waiting for an opportunity to excel, whether that's by a trade of someone in front of him, an injury, by him winning the job. Who's a guy that you think, okay, if this guy gets the job, I want to jump all over him?
Yeah. Well, again, Stauskas, just based on him not playing last year, and then if he's playing 30 minutes a game, I'm all over him. Kanan, the same thing. If he's the starter, all aboard, because he's going to help big time in threes.
Yep.
And then assuming Covington is the starter and gets 30 plus minutes a night, super, super high on him. The Jeremy Grant thing worries me a little bit. So, you know, I'm not sure that he's going to get 30 minutes a night, but maybe you play him at the two for a little bit, or even do like a stretch four thing with him for a little bit. So I think the opportunity should be there for him.
Yep, I would agree with all of that. The guy I've got down is Pierre Jackson. If he's able to get the starting job, you want to get in with him, depending on what they do with Cannon and Roden. But if he was to get the starting job and get 28 to 30 minutes, then he's going to have pretty significant value.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anyone else. I think we've talked about pretty much every player already. Is there anyone else? Unless you've got some really pressing thoughts on Furkan Aldemir.
I'm sorry to say, but I do not have any pressing thoughts on Furkan.
I just like saying Furkan Aldemir.
Yeah. There are some really good puns with his name. He lends himself to some really entertaining headlines.
He sure does. All right, let's get to the fun-ish part of the show.
All right.
Who's your favorite player on this team?
It's got to be Nerlens.
Yep.
I love. I mean, first of all, the hair alone just makes me in love with him. I love what he brings to the court. I love, you know, I think I just have not seen a player that young who's able to take, like, for this cast of characters to be a top half ranked defense last year is insane.
Yep.
And it was really, like, a large part due to Nerlens. I mean, KJ McDaniels helped, Jeremy helped, MCW a little bit, but, like, Nerlens was the anchor of that D. And, you know, if he really is developing a jump shot, just based on his, I mean, for him to come back from a year off and just continually progress and get better and better and better as the season went on, like, I am super excited to see him this fall. Like, what is he going to be like with the full off season of work?
It's going to be real interesting to see. And remember, he was coming back last season from the ACL, and guys who are, it takes 2 years to get back, 1 year to get back on the court, and then 1 year to get back to normal. So he's going to be that 2 years now. So we could be seeing actual, not even peak Noel, but actual Noel. Like, this is the level that Nerlens should be at now. That he's 2 years removed basically from this ACL. So he's my favorite player on this team as well. The hair seals it. Everything looks good with him. I just love watching him defensively. It's just really fun watching him play. Now the important one, Brian, who's your favorite all-time player on this team?
The analytics crowd will hate me, but I'm a child of... he's my second favorite. I'm a child of the 90s, so Allen Iverson's my guy.
Okay.
There's nothing like watching Allen Iverson just drive, you know, this little 6 foot dude driving into the paint when Shaquille O'Neal is there, and he just doesn't give a damn. He's just going straight at him. He was, you know, he's a total chucker. The analytics crowd would hate him. He was probably overvalued, but like Nerlens raising this team's defense to a top half defense for Iverson to have gotten the 2001 team to the finals and to steal a game against that Lakers team is insane. Like totally, totally insane. Yeah. So yeah, he's my guy. And you know, I went to Georgetown, so that only seals the deal. Like got 2 years of him from Georgetown as well. So always going to be a special place in my heart for AI.
That's completely fair enough. He was a really good fantasy player as well. Like all those years he had of averaging over 30 points a game, he was getting... This is the crazy thing about him from a fantasy point of view. He got over 2 steals a game for 9 straight seasons. The first 9 seasons of his career, he did that. He averaged over 20 points a game for basically 12... Well, his first 12 seasons as well. He had a run of... over 7 assists a game, even late career. He was putting up some, and all the 30-point scoring ones. He wasn't a great guy in terms of your field goal percentage. That was pretty much destroyed when you had him on your team. It was like seriously, his 2001-2 season, he shot 39.8% from the field on 27.8 attempts.
Oh,
like that is
that sounds right.
That's brutal. And 4 turnovers. Yeah. Like, just forget about it. Forget about it. That's Tony Roten on steroids. Forget about that. That is just killing you. And then if you also had 3-point percentage, he shot 29% in that category as well. So that wasn't ideal. But otherwise, the other numbers were incredible for him. And just weird the way he finished off. He just became nothing. It was real. And all these weird stories coming out about him now. Taking somewhat of the gloss off him just in terms of him as a person, but you can't deny the numbers and the play that he put on for everybody on the court.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not totally surprising that a guy like that was just never going to transition into like the Vince Carter bench role. That
that's true.
He's used to being the guy. And if he can't be the guy, then his way or the highway.
That's you're right. You could have predicted it. We should have predicted that. That's how it was going to end. Now I was looking at my favorite player on this team, and I thought, okay, so I'm a bit older than you, Brian. So you're growing up, you're watching Iverson in the '90s. I'm growing up watching stuff early '90s. I think is it Charles Barkley? Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's too obvious. Is it Manute Bol? Yeah, I don't know. I had a friend at a friend at high school whose favorite player ever is Manute Bol. Collects everything Manute Bol related, so I'm just throwing the Manute Bol reference out there. But the guy that I wanted to mention is Clarence Weatherspoon. He had a decent run. He wasn't prolonged. Okay. He wasn't great, but he started off really red hot when he came into the league. He averaged almost 16 points a game as a rookie, seven rebounds. He was a pretty decent shooter. And then he had a run an 18-10 season with over a steal, over almost a block and a half. Did that for a few seasons. Started to drift away then, but he came into the league. His first few seasons, first 4 or 5 seasons in Philadelphia were really good. So much so when in all the Red Rock listener leagues that I've got, Brian, I've got 12 leagues and they're all named after players. I've got one of them is the Clarence Weatherspoon division. So he got one
That's
of the
awesome.
one of the 12 there. Who else have I got? There's a Kendall Gill division, the Sarunas Marcellonis, Lafonso Ellis. There's lots of blasts. Christian Laettner division. There's a lot of blasts from the past from the early to mid '90s. But I was a big Clarence Weatherspoon fan. Loved collecting his basketball cards as well, the old Upper Deck ones back from '92. His rookie, I've got his rookie card somewhere from the '92-'93 Upper Deck series. So I've got that somewhere as well. So he's my guy, Clarence Weatherspoon. And I reckon a lot of people listening to this podcast have never heard of Clarence Weatherspoon before. I would venture a guess.
I'm sure the people in the '70s and the '80s are like, have you not heard of Dr. J? Is he not a thing?
Yeah. So. If I had been alive then, when he was able to watch it, that's definitely
right.
Lots of guys there. But unfortunately, didn't get to watch Dr. J play. Didn't get to watch Wilt play. I'm not that old.
Yeah. Moses.
Yeah. not quite at that level. I'm more like early to mid '90s is when I started watching things. In fact, another guy that I had that's named in the listener leagues is another Sixers guy. I got the Hersey Hawkins division as well.
Oh, yes.
So I've got a couple of Sixers guys. Didn't realize I had two Sixers guys in there. I thought probably, maybe I've got another
one. So many legends.
Yeah. Hersey Hawkins, he's an interesting guy as well. All right, Brian, I think we're done. I think we've covered Sixers. Is there anything you want to chuck in there?
Fingers crossed that Joel Embiid's foot heals. Just everyone, keep his foot in your prayers.
Yes.
Even if you're not a Sixers fan or you don't care about his fantasy upside. Yeah, like he's just, it hurts my soul. And, you know, as much as I'm excited for another year of his Twitter and him hitting on Rihanna, like I just want to see the dude play.
Yeah, no, everybody wants to get him out there. We need to see what he's able to do. He might not be good, but the all likelihood is that he is going to be good.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, let's remind everybody where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find all your musings on basketball.
Yes, so you can find me on Twitter at @btoporik, and then you can find my writing at Bleacher Report, B-Ball Breakdown, Vantage Sports, Hardwood Paroxysm, Hoop 76 of the True Hoop Network, and I will have some fantasy content this year at Today's Fast Break.
Well, so that's it. Brian's basically got basketball covered in terms of every website in the world, so you can find him all over the place. You can find me on Basketball Monster, of course, and you can find me at Red Rock Basketball, and the podcast is at Hardwood Paroxysm. I'm going to be doing some writing over there as well. So make sure you are downloading the podcast and, of course, subscribing to it through iTunes. Leave a review if you like what you hear. Give me some feedback. Give me some comments, funny comments, whatever you want to do. Just put something in iTunes and help the podcast grow. Help it grow in the rankings. Let's get it to become the number one fantasy basketball podcast. That would be a big achievement. I'd be happy with that. Very happy with that. So everyone get out there and subscribe and review and all that sort of stuff. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Subscribe on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, all those places where you can find me, and make sure you're checking out Basketball Monster as well. Brian, thank you for coming on the show. It was great having you on. You provided a ton of interesting information.
Thanks for having me on. Anytime.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.